I'm for this. This is, you know, Bowser Nazaroff 2024, the youth hurt.
Wait, who's at the top of this ticket? That's what I want to know.
Huh?
Who's at the top of this ticket?
We'll flip a coin. It's fine.
Okay.
We
appreciate that you left me out of this one as well.
I assumed you didn't want to be involved in this, at least.
You want to be a Supreme Court justice? We can make that happen.
Yes.
Sure. What do you want?
Place notorious RBG.
What cabinet do you want? You know,
soft.
Yeah.
Treasury.
Treasury or state? What do you want?
The kitchen.
The kitchen cabinet. I'd like to be more of an armoire of defense.
Oh,
all right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring our entire faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
Yes, if we sound a little off today, we might be a little off. We're recording the day after the national election in the United States.
Dun, 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 dun.
And Pastor David is home.
I like that we clarify the United States for all of our international.
I don't know, maybe people are like, yeah, what's going on in France? I don't know.
Yeah.
Pastor David is home with a sick child.
I am, yeah. They're so fine. It's pink eye. It's no big deal. But they're not allowed to like be around other kids. So
been there. It's misery.
Contagion.
Yeah. Good luck with that. You know.
Thanks. Yeah, he's resting. So we're all fine.
Yes.
Other than, this unexplainable pain that I have in my shoulder. But sure, other than that, we're fine.
Yeah,
fine.
That's probably pink eye related.
Yeah, probably. It seems likely.
Put that into WebMD. See what you can work with. Yeah. Yeah. So as of time of recording, we have no idea who wins the 2020 presidential election.
Nope. Maybe by the time this is released.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe
we don't know.
You as a listener might know who has won.
In which case, if you as a listener know, feel free to come back in time and tell us as those recording right now and make sure that we can get out of this angst and you can just tell us who wins.
Yep.
But we
time
do.
Travel is a thing.
But we are going to have a little bit of election thoughts, and more specifically, like a little bit of like, where do we go from here? As what is the next step now that a very contentious election is over? What do we do now? And that's kind of going to be our main story.
I love it.
For our podcast, but we do have some news to go over first. Let me pull this up here on my phone.
Because I have another election. 1 hour of news made me hurt, so this could be, this could be rough.
Small doses.
that hurts your shoulder to watch the news last night. This is going after your knee here.
Oh, geez. All right.
Yes. There's another election taking place here in the United States. Specific to a California
Senate races,
neighborhood.
House races.
Yes, this mayoral. Is a California neighborhood. Yes, this is a mayoral race in California neighborhood. The most important election. Which dog or cat will become the mayor of this California neighborhood?
Excellent.
Yes, because local elections matter.
That's right.
You don't want to get lost.
This is why people turn
level.
Out. Yeah.
Yes.
Could you mail in your ballot for that one?
How the selection's going to work here. 55th Street in a California neighborhood has an election this year for the mayor of their neighborhood, and there are four candidates.
Okay.
Two dogs and two cats running to be mayor. Yes. There's the incumbent, Mayor Wally. Wally is an orange and white tabby cat. He's running on a pro speed bump platform. Because slower traffic equals greater for outdoor pets, which you can't get wrong.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
Sure, yeah. He also has some negative attacks out about one of his challengers, Betty, because she is going to be bad for business and soft on crime.
Is Betty a dog or a cat?
Betty's a cat.
Yeah, I imagine a cat would be soft on crime. I don't have any problem believing that.
Yeah.
Cat is crime, I think.
Sure. Exactly. Well, Betty the cat.
You're basically electing a mob boss when you elect a cat.
So Wally is the incumbent mayor. So his sign was out first. Betty is the first challenger here. The gray feminist tabby is running on a pro catnip stance. I guess a legalized stance or decriminalized stance. Right. Yeah.
Sure. Yep.
Catnip recreational.
Her slogan: change meow.
Change meow. Okay.
Yeah. And she's at least one vote from her human sister Maeve, who told the news article here she's really good and she wants to crush the patriarchy, and so that's why I'm gonna vote for her, and she's awesome. So that's Betty. But according to Wally, bad for business, soft on crime. So
right, you gotta watch out for those cat nipping feminist cats. I don't know. Yeah. I don't even know what I'm supposed to watch out for there.
Also, why does this feel a lot like the actual election so far?
From what you said. From what I said, yeah. No. Well, Mimi.
Because the dogs aren't involved yet. That's why.
Yeah, let's get a dog in here. Mimi, the dog.
The Green Party. And
yes. Shiba Inu? I don't
know. Shiba Inu.
Shiba Inu? Yeah, you know your breeds, right?
I do, yeah. I'm very nerdy about
dog breeds.
Yeah.
we should talk about that sometime on the podcast.
Yeah,
that
sounds like a dog breed quiz here. Her slogan is "She'll bark when it matters." She's courting the votes of the nearest neighbors. She'll be quiet and chase the squirrels away. That's her. That's her political platform here. And finally, like Macy, pit bull mix. And her slogan is "Keep Oakland Rough."
No.
And she's already the support of at least one. A neighbor who's going to vote for Macy because she would be a very good mayor. There you go. Let's get some real issues in there for Macy. Okay, come on. She's all talk, no bite. Yes.
Does this have any sort of real world implications? Like, does this mayor have a responsibility, or what's happening? I want to know just how deep this goes.
Yeah,
it's all.
I'm a little concerned for the neighborhood of Oakland.
It's all in good fun. Kids are the electorate, so they will vote. They have a ballot box to drop off their selections. And it's designed to teach their kids in the neighborhood about democracy, fairness, equity, justice, and make it so the kids have a choice, you know, and talk about democracy in their neighborhood. So it's just be a fun way to embrace, you know, the voting spirit for children.
The voting spirit?
Do they embrace the electoral college spirit in this little mayoral election as well? Because I think kids need to start understanding that as well. I think that's become clear that we need to have a better understanding of how that works.
Yes. All right, so that's the election. All right, so here we have our four candidates. Is there anyone that you're really looking at as kind of like that's your candidate for this?
I think Betty's my girl.
That you want to vote behind? Okay, you're team Betty.
I honestly don't remember the options.
Wow. It's called being engaged with the electoral process.
I was not. Yep.
You just walk into a booth, you press a letter. That's not the way this works, okay?
Just close your eyes.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, on this one, I'm gonna stick with Wally, the incumbent, okay? You know, I'm gonna press
going for the entrenched politician. I see how it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he have a slogan, though? I think he's the only one that we didn't hear the slogan.
He doesn't use a slogan. He's already won. Mm.
I think that's
Wally is the mayor. That's the slogan.
They do have signs in front of their houses with their pictures on there. That is pretty funny. It's pretty cute. Just re-elect Wally. Wally for mayor. That's
nice. Good luck, Wally. I hope you do well.
Oh, he's cute.
Yeah, he's a cute guy. There's Betty.
Okay. Yeah.
I probably wouldn't vote for a cat. I'll just be honest. I'm gonna vote for one of the two dogs.
Yeah. Mimi's cute. I would go that way. Yeah, Macy. Aww. I mean, she's just lame.
Macy's asleep and her.
You guys realize that nobody else can see what you're looking at, right?
They're talking about how adorable dogs are.
Like, yeah, this is really terrible podcast.
They looked it up. They Googled it when they heard this. Yeah. All right. So that's as of recording, the results of that election have not been made public. Like our national election, they're still under a counting phase, evidently.
Maybe they had some
mail-in votes coming in that they have to work out.
I bet one of those cats challenges it in court. It seems like something a cat would do.
Yeah.
Wally. He's
going to
do it.
Wally, yeah. I appreciate it. Now, would your pet run for mayor of your neighborhood?
Critter?
Yeah.
Much too nervous.
Well, we have two cats. Yeah. What about Snape or...
Snape.
Or what? Mm-hmm. Yeti?
Yeah.
Perhaps he's more of the silent, hostile takeover type than a actual outright democratic process. He's more of a, I'm just going to be your overlord and rule you now. So
my cat, Princess Leia, is very, very social. Whenever people come over, she loves to come by and be seen. So I think she would probably be our candidate. Mm-hmm. I would nominate Princess Leia for mayor of our neighborhood.
There you go.
And I think she'd be really fun and friendly. We have a new dog, and he's a little too wild. I think he's, he's got a little too much nervous energy right now.
Hey, there's a reason there's an age limit before you can run for president, right? That's you got to get that out before you can
handle the big office. Give him a couple years. Maybe after, Leia does her time, maybe Boba Fetch will come in and be ready to go. So.
Sure.
All right, so let's take a look here. So this is from Relevant Magazine, our mainstream. Ooh. Relevant, we use a lot. So, a little Christian.
They do have some interesting stuff.
All right. So, the headline is: No matter what happens, Christians must be peacemakers amidst election day unrest. Are you feeling first election day unrest?
As of right now, I think all of us are feeling that.
I think so. And I think even though this will most likely have at least an inkling of a knowledge of who will be next president of the United States, what our Senate and House will look like by the time this podcast come out, I don't think that even that knowledge is going to solve unrest amongst our nation.
I agree.
I think there's going to be a very large swatch of people out there with severe unrest over the next few months, years, maybe even decades from this. Who knows? You know, both parties have kind of pushed their chips on the table and kind of said, like, this is the most important election of your lifetime. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I guess until the next one, because every new one is the most important one.
That's kind of how they work. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone was like, you know what? This election is not important at all.
Yeah. It's not that big a deal. It's fine. Yeah. It's not nearly as big as last time. This is stay home. This one.
I believe, as of time of recording, and I can't see the way this would change. Like, both this election has had the most amount of votes that the United States has ever had. Joe Biden has gotten the most amount of votes than any presidential candidate has ever had. So there's obviously a lot of investment from our national level, levels that are somewhat unparalleled to past elections. Mm-hmm. And I did read a study that said 55, which is a lot, percent of Americans said the election Tuesday was the most anxious day of their life.
Oh, wow.
55%.
Yeah. I don't know. I think those people need to reevaluate their life. If the election is the most anxious day of your life, like, I get that there's a lot of anxiety around this. I get that there's a lot of stress and concern, but, like, I don't know. Come on. Like,
yeah.
Well, I think we can say we kind of forget some of those anxious days in our life because they've resolved themselves on some level. Even if it's hard, and even if we're kind of, you know, the anxious day of my life was maybe filing divorce papers or getting test results from a hospital or waiting for the birth of a child. And even if, like, you got divorced or you got negative test results or, you know, like, you're still dealing with, like, childhood illness, they've somewhat resolved themselves so much, so you've kind of forgotten those things. Yeah, this is so fresh and renew. So it's not a surprise that people would say that. I agree that I don't think that that is necessarily correct, but it is something that people are saying. Anxiety's in the air. I mean, that's just no doubt about it. As a nation, we're very anxious over what this election and the next 4 years are going to look like.
Yeah.
And both sides have kind of said, if the other party or candidate wins, it's the death of America as you know it.
Yep.
So I mean, like, if they're both telling the truth, no way about it, in 4 years America's gonna look different than it does today.
Yep.
And there might be some truth to that. There might be some exaggeration to that. And in reality, in 4 years time, there'll be two new candidates or, you know, same candidates or whatever, and it will be the next most important election.
Well, in theory, it can't be the same candidates, right?
Look at it. Biden wins, Trump could challenge him again.
That's true. Okay. Yeah.
So
now I'm anxious.
Get ready. But I think one thing is for sure, in the midst of this anxiety, social unrest, and a political divide that may be greater than it's ever been, how can Christians deal with this and help with this?
Yep.
You know, how can we kind of, because of our connection to Jesus, come into this space and provide, whether that's a bridge, whether that's a healing, whether that's, you know, a listening ear, whatever it is, what can we do to make things easier for America as a whole?
Mm-hmm.
And then this is going to be just certainly America-centric. We're Americans. We're talking about the American election. So I do think that the role of Christianity on the global scale is to be advocates for peace and reconciliation wherever we are. But here in this time and space, you know, Christians probably have a greater calling or a greater understanding of what it looks like in our political divide to be advocates of peace and reconciliation than maybe we can on a worldwide stage at this point, especially in light of a very contentious election that is the most important election.
Certainly the most important election of the last 2 years.
Certainly. Yep. I mean, look, well, you know, the neighborhood, whether Wally versus Betty versus Mimi, yeah. you know, that one's, you know, that one maybe it's 1A, 1B probably.
That's so. Right, yeah. Exactly.
It's really up there.
It's touch and go. Right.
Let's talk about this anxiety first. Let's start there. We've said you may not experience, you being that 55% that says this is the most anxious day of your life, but how do you feel? Do you have anxiety? Are you seeing anxiety in our world where we are right now over kind of this election or where things are going?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely anxiety. Like for me, I told you earlier that I thought I was fine. I thought I had kind of, you know, I'd been so inundated with like election news anyway leading up to this. I thought like I'd kind of, you know, dealt with it and was in a good place. And last night I realized I was cleaning my house constantly, just like walking around looking for stuff to move. And I was like, oh no, I am anxious. Like, this is not a healthy Elise McCarter.
This is a normal behavior.
Right. This is a very anxious me.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think, you know, we feel it in every conversation that we have with other people. I mean, we've already got so much stress going into every conversation that we have, especially with a stranger, right? Because, you know, you're out in public, and so you're already potentially anxious about that. You and someone else may or may not be wearing a mask, and so you're potentially anxious about that, about whether you're wearing it or they're wearing it or you're not wearing it, whatever that might be. And then, you know, you're trying to have a conversation with this person about a parking spot or about, you know, the price of something in the grocery store or whatever, you know, whatever normal passing conversation you might have is already heightened tension from everything that's happening. You know, are they going to say something about the fact that I am or am not wearing a mask at this moment? Are they going to, you know, be upset that this thing happened? Are they going to say something about that? Are they going to see this thing? And I think we're all just on heightened alert for the things that divide us from one another. I think our anxiety right now is rooted in finding those things that separate us from each other rather than turning towards, okay, I see this person and this is a person and I'm a person and we're in this thing together. And I think a reason that we're not looking at this as we're in this thing together is because there's so much rhetoric around, well, you're not in this. It's so evident that some people don't think we're in this together because they don't want to be in this together.
Yeah.
I think this is the first time that I remember too, whenever I'm having a conversation with either a new person I've met or somebody that I don't know super well, just kind of dreading that moment when they ask me about my political opinions knowing that it's going to happen, because it seems like that's so much on the forefront of everything we're talking about right now, that it's just like a given that when you are getting to know somebody, that's going to come up and pretty quickly too.
Yeah. And then like when it does come up, it's like, do we agree and we can be friends,
or
do we disagree? And then all of a sudden, whatever budding relationship was there is over. And I think you could see it like nationwide. I know going into the election, there are news articles and images of like cities, businesses, downtowns boarding up windows. Mm-hmm. You know, people saying like the National Guard is going to be called into cities to help control populations and peace. Multiple cities were saying they're preparing for all possible scenarios when it comes to the election process. So, I mean, we see this, there's also an emotional element that we can see, you know, we can feel in our nation right now.
Just out of curiosity, when they prepare for all possible scenarios, do they prepare for the scenario where everybody gets a whipped cream pie and goes into the streets and just eats whipped cream pie together? Like, do they prepare for that scenario? What's the extent of every possible scenario that they're preparing for? That's what I really want to know.
I do appreciate that that's where you went with the other possible scenario.
Yes.
You know. Drivers
are on board. They have cherries ready to top off your whipped cream pie.
That's what I want to know. I think that's part of it too. Like, we say every possible scenario and we immediately think, what's the worst thing that can possibly happen?
Yeah.
You know, none of us are preparing for the scenario where we have this normal, simple, peaceful transition of power, because we've all just gotten so amped up that we're saying that's not even a scenario. So all possible scenarios include all of the ways that stuff can go bad.
Yeah. And I think we can see the church can kind of fail in, I think, two big ways, and we'll get into a little bit. So one is to disengage entirely, to kind of say like, we'll just wait for this, whatever anxiety storm is going to pass, and then people will come back to church and, you know, want to be, you know, with us. And I don't think that's going to be helpful, because I don't think it's necessarily just going to get better on its own. I think we're going to continue to see these types of, you know, levels of division and anxiety and hurt as we continue to move forward. So that's one option. Well, the other option is kind of like throw fuel on the fire, mm-hmm. to be anxious about our political state, to say those things of like, here's where I'm, you know, to kind of mimic or mirror or parrot the anxiety of our world back into our own congregations or into our own faith walks of like, let's bring, I guess, like, let's speak to the same anxieties that our world is having right now from a Christian point of view, that we have that same anxiety or that mm-hmm. same worry. And both those ways, I think, are really not going to be helpful to our community and world, that they're both going to be more damaging and lead to a greater divide and not mm-hmm. healing. But I understand the temptation to do both. I really genuinely do, because I personally want to do both simultaneously. I want to turn off my news and not worry about it and forget it all and say, I'm Christ the solid rock I stand. I trust in Jesus. I'm done with this mm-hmm. and move on. And I also want to go on Facebook or Twitter or the internet and argue with strangers about how could you support X candidate, and this doesn't make any sense and things like that. I want to do both, so I understand. Yeah. So this article is going to list a couple ways that Christians can be peacekeepers in this time that we're going to dive into, okay?
Well, actually, it talks about being a peacemaker, yes. which I think is a really important thing.
Yep.
What I was going to say is one of my favorite things about this article, and not to cut you off, I'm not trying to jump on you there, but I was just thinking about, like, to me, that's a big distinction between being a peacemaker and a peacekeeper.
Okay.
So we have a much more active role in peacemaking. It's much more proactive.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Elise. That's certainly for my sake and probably good to the listeners too, to clarify that. So number one, promote just peacemaking. And we've talked about justice a lot over the last several months on this podcast. And so this is part of that kind of conversation that we're having, but this is certainly from the framework or the understanding of peacemaking is part of that goal. All right. So promote just peacemaking. So this is going to be like, one can acknowledge there's not just hurt or anxiety that we're experiencing as a nation, but there's hurt and anxiety that we're experiencing within family structures mm-hmm. and units, friend structures and units, church communities, neighborhoods, PTA, you know, mm-hmm. groups, whatever group you're in, there's probably anxiety, you know, and maybe stress and conflict within those groups, especially if they're not just insular and they're only made up of like one political persuasion. There's going mm-hmm. to be some angst in there. So this just peacemaking is that intentionality that Christians in those units and groups are very intentional to promote, not only to promote peace, but to undo the hurt that they themselves have caused. And to start there, to start with saying, like, what is the hurt I have caused? How can I undo that? So what do you think about this idea first of like, this is the hurt I've caused, how can I undo that?
That's the standard practice of confession. I mean, that should be our daily practice, is to be looking for those places where we have caused hurt and be trying to repair that. This shouldn't just be about making peace. I think this should be a daily part of the walk of faith, is looking for those places where we've been a part of that.
Yeah. I like how personal that makes it, because I think so much of like our anxiety in particular about politics and the election tends to be projected outwards. Like something outside is happening that I think is wrong or is making me anxious, and I am trying to deal with these external forces. But I think acknowledging that you are also potentially causing harm or causing mm-hmm. anxiety for other people is a good perspective to have.
Yeah, I think, it brings it more home. It eliminates this idea that those people are the problem. Mm-hmm. And those people, if they acted right, you know, then we as a nation would be okay. And it first says, like, am I acting right?
Yeah.
How am I commenting on people's Facebook posts right now? How am I engaging with strangers on the internet? How am I looking at my neighbor with that sign in their yard? And then how can I undo the hurt I've caused? And that's an acknowledgement maybe of going to friends, family, coworkers, people that we used to be friends with and now we're kind of just Facebook friends, and saying like, hey, I need you to know that I was really rude and angry towards you, and I'm sorry. And finding those posts that we put up and say, hey, I'm sorry that my tone did not convey a good, know, a peaceful process here. Mm-hmm. And then I gave into anger so quickly and easily over these issues. And maybe these are big time issues that should have anger attached to them. But I not only, but I spoke as if you were not a person. And that's the problem with this kind of conversation. And I think that that is a start. Like that first, that ownership first of how can I be there? How can I own my part is the first thing we need to do.
And this was a big piece of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that came out of South Africa post-apartheid. This is a process where people who had committed crimes in the name of apartheid against one racial group or another were allowed to receive amnesty for their crimes, essentially. But a central piece was they had to, in detail, say this is what I did, and they had to do it publicly. They couldn't just write it down and turn it in. Like, no, this was a public hearing that had to be available. They had to do this in front of family members, the victims of their crimes and all this stuff. And this is just to say, public confession is not only good for you as an individual, it's actually good for the community. Because we then get to set an example of what that looks like to own those places where, we've made mistakes, we've hurt people, and the community can heal through that process of our confessing the places where we have fallen short as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and that's a kind of a beautiful way that South Africa have decided to kind of like, how can we find healing and with where there can't, where from the outside looking in, you might say like, there's no way to heal from these kinds of wounds. And the first step that they found was like speaking the wounds and into existence, like saying the wounds that I have caused is the first step to finding at least some form of healing. It's not the only step, it's not the last step, but it is that first step. All right, so I think that's part of the ones we have to do. And so the next one they're going to emphasize here in this article is number two, avoid the spread of misinformation.
Ooh, preach.
And I think, again, in the ownership category, this is going to be first and foremost, it's maybe easier for us to be like, I agree. They should avoid the spread of misinformation. Fair. That person or that group needs to get their act together and stop doing that. But this is really kind of like, how can I make sure I'm not doing this? So what do you think here? How can we avoid the spread of misinformation?
Fact check three times.
So I actually ran into this, this is 3 or 4 weeks ago. I have a family member who does not share my political persuasions and so often posts things which I find difficult to process. Well, I have one who's particularly active on Facebook. And so, I'll see these and I will often, comment of like, hey, this isn't true, or, here's this thing that shows this didn't happen, or this is, taken off context, whatever. Mm-hmm. I will often do that. And then one morning, right after I had, done something else, I think legitimately, trying to call out this misinformation thing, I saw a post from someone who I do typically agree with politically. And I immediately was like, oh yeah, that's such a great story. And then found myself going, wait, do I actually know what I'm, agreeing to? And I started looking at the headline and I started looking at the picture and I started looking at this. And I, I responded to this person that I really, appreciate and whose, comments are valuable and said, is this true? Like this, I was, going off to something else. I don't have time to fact check this right now, but this photo looks doctored. This doesn't seem, there's not a source attributed to this. Is this a real thing? And it turns out it was a real thing. But it was, I caught myself in that moment of how quickly it was easy for me to jump on something that I disagree with and just accept something that already supports what I'm going along with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is hard work to challenge our own assumptions all the time.
I think a good rule of thumb is that if something seems or feels sensationalized, you need to do some digging.
I'd say, one of the spread of information, one is like, read the article.
Read
the headline and be like, that sounds pretty true.
Calm down.
And throw it out there. And then also, I think sometimes it's like, I think we get into a mindset of like, I read the headline and I did my fact checking and it's not true, but we kind of instinctively be like, yeah, but it could be. Sure. Or yeah, but like it feels like it's true.
It's got some good points.
Yeah, it feels, because it talks about this candidate or that I do not like, or this group of people I do not like. And I'm like, yeah, but it feels like they would feel that way. And when those things are exposed, if you post something and it is exposed as an untruth, it should be celebrated that like these feelings of like this ex candidate did X thing wrong. You should be like, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
And not like, oh, I'm sad. Not because his article was wrong, but because they probably would do something like mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think we're treating each other with any kind of real charity or understanding. And we're forgetting that even, you know, you are a staunch Republican, to forget that, like, man, Joe Biden is created in the image of God and God's beloved child. And if you're a staunch Democrat, Donald Trump is created in the image of God and yeah. God's beloved child. Mm-hmm. And like, those things are true no matter what, you know, and that doesn't mean you have to like them or vote for them, or it doesn't mean they don't do things that are sometimes you might find appalling, but starting there, like, so I don't want to spread a misinformation that damages that very real child of God on the other side, you know, without the, at least the charity of verifying it beforehand.
Yeah.
So
number three, empathize with the fears of those whom you disagree with.
Oof.
So again, at time of recording, we don't know who wins, but probably maybe at time of listening, you might know that half of our country might be elated, rejoicing, feeling like, thank goodness, the America I know and love is safe. And the other half is, they're seeing a world, at the very least momentarily, crumble before them and thinking the America I know and love is in dangerous peril. And whether you might disagree with that sentiment, it is very real for the people who are thinking those things. It is a very real thought. And you might think you're being dramatic or you're being silly, but I think that is their reality that they're living in. And so I think taking the time to, when interacting with, you know, like you mentioned, that stranger beforehand, to say like, oh, you believe this X that's different than me, I'm taking the time to say, tell me where this anxiety is coming from.
Yeah.
Help me understand your point of view and wanting to listen. I think that's probably what we're probably not doing very well as a country, and the church can do a better job of, is I just want to sit and listen and ask the questions right now. Instead of telling you why you're wrong, just tell me what you think.
Yeah.
And I could think maybe in my head, I think you're wrong, or I think you're seeing this world incorrectly. But I just want you to express it so that we can get it out there and address it for what it is.
Yeah, I have two analogies, and both of these may come off as accidentally not being a person of peacemaking, but we're gonna try it anyway. You know, one thing that comes to mind is like taking care of a little kid and them being afraid of the monster in the closet or the thing under the bed or the or the, you know, the noise outside the window, whatever it is. Right? You don't just, at least in my experience with my own parents, you know, you don't just walk into the room and say, you have nothing to be afraid of, just be quiet and go to sleep, right? You know, you're making it up. It's all in your head. Just go to sleep. Like, no, you look under the bed, you open the closet door, you acknowledge that they have, and this is not to say that the person who disagrees with you is an infant, but right, you, but we have to enter into that space. The other thing that I'm thinking about, I had a great uncle who suffered or dealt with Alzheimer's before he died, and was in a fantastic memory care facility that was taking care of him. And one of their kind of guiding principles was that they just entered into whatever kind of a delusion was happening in that moment, that rather than trying to combat the delusion, they entered into it so that they became safe for that person to interact with. And by becoming safe, they were able to bring that person back into the reality that they were facing. And again, I don't think that anybody who disagrees with me is someone with Alzheimer's who doesn't know what's happening in the world. But I think if we have that place to empathize with the realities that people are facing, there's an opportunity for us to draw them into a deeper conversation about what's really happening and perhaps have both of our hearts turn towards something greater than that which divides us.
Yeah. So I know I talked about conversations, political conversations with strangers, but I'm considering myself super fortunate to have a very diverse friend group. And that includes people who would be far left of me and people who would be far right of me. And something that I think that has been super grounding for me in this whole process is to just look at these people and say, you know what, I don't understand these fears necessarily. I don't necessarily understand these views, but I love this person. So I'm going to try. Even if I can't understand, mm-hmm. I'm going to try and show up and still, you know, have compassion about what those fears and those views are.
That is one of the greatest gifts and challenges of serving the church. is, you know, looking out at a congregation week after week and saying, I don't understand 50% of my congregation some weeks, right? But every one of you is a beloved child of God, and I get to stand here and represent that love for you and figure out what that means for me.
Yeah, I think too, that's helped sort of ease some of that anxiety for me, is that I think at the end of the day, we're going to be okay, because I think the majority of us actually want the same things. Mm-hmm. We just disagree about how we prioritize them and how to get there.
Yeah. I definitely, I hear 100% what you're saying, Elise, and I agree. I think no conversation where you go into it with the idea of like, I want to understand this person across the table better or clearer, that you were going to walk away from disappointed in those things.
Yeah.
I think if you will go to the conversation table and say like, I want to make this person understand my point of view, I think you can walk away very, very easily to say like, all you did was butt heads and get firmer entrenched into your own preconceived notions of what the other thought and what you thought. But when you come to the say, like, I just want to understand. And you might walk away being like, I think that person does not see the world the way it is. But I think that understanding helps say like, I'm trying to see where you come from. And then that gives maybe for that other person, the desire to want to see where you come from. And your point of view as well. And I think you have a greater success at finding commonality that way than just yelling at one another.
Yeah. Well, I think that part of being a peacemaker is that you have to be okay that that person is not necessarily going to approach that conversation with the same that you are.
Yeah.
They may want to yell at you and make you understand them, even if you approach the conversation wanting to understand them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think you know, the path of Jesus would say like, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, you didn't come, you know, you didn't come to be heard, you came to hear.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what it is. Like, just like, you didn't come to be served, you came to serve. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's the way that it sometimes is going to work. All right, number four, so we can get through this. Pray for wisdom for our leaders.
Yep, on board.
Even if your candidate that you voted for gets elected, they will face challenges and difficulties in our nation that they are unprepared for, that they cannot see or control. There are things that arise over the next 4 years that will be out of their hands, out of their controls, that they themselves don't quite know how to deal with. Every president we've ever had has had to experience these things. Every leader of any organization has had to deal with these things. And so praying for wisdom from your mayor, your state reps, your governor, your Senate, your House reps, all the way to the president, whatever entities you are leading our nation, for wisdom is something we can do no matter what. So if your candidate wins, that's something you can do. If your candidate loses, that's something you can do. That's an active role that you can play instead of waiting for the next time to go into, you know, a voting booth to spin a dial or to fill out an absentee ballot or whatever it is. You can always turn to this to pray for that person. And I think that this is a powerful one that is easy to miss or forget, is that value of help God give that person wisdom and insight to govern best in this world. Yeah, any other thoughts on this one?
We should pray. Pray for those who persecute you. We should do that.
Pretty self-explanatory.
And then number five, remember the only kingdom that will not fail.
And the United Kingdom.
UK.
Rome.
Yes. Yeah.
Oops.
So this reminds us that, you know, that Martin Luther would say, like, we kind of have a foot in two kingdoms, an earthly one and a heavenly one. And this idea that we can be completely invested in what's going on in this earthly one, with the knowledge that it is not the permanent home of any of us, and that the heavenly kingdom is the one that ultimately matters in this universe. That's what it's going to look like. That the eternal kingdom is still present, even when the temporal kingdom that we live in every day is upset and turned flipped on its head. Those things are reality. So it's reminding us that even though this world may be really, really hard right now, the eternal kingdom is still beautiful and present in our lives, in our communities, in our families, in our churches. Any other thoughts on being a peacemaker?
I got two for us. I think one is devil's advocate here. At what point is being a peacemaker maybe unintentionally legitimizing views that simply don't lead to peace, right? Yeah. And at what point, you know, if we continue to be a peacemaker with someone who spouts racism, mm-hmm. and we try to empathize with their fears that are completely unfounded because someone is a different race than they are, or whatever that might be, you know, at what point do we move from actually enabling this very poor behavior as opposed to being a person who's walking with Jesus and trying to bring peace into that place? I think that's just, that's the hole that I always see with this. And it's not an irreparable hole, but it's one that I think we need to reconcile with, that there will be times when we need to call a spade, right? We need to see sin and call it out as sin and not stand for it, not allow it to continue to be a part of our life or hopefully the lives of those around us. And we just need to be careful that we're not seeking peace in the absence of seeking real justice as mm-hmm. well. And we'll talk about biblical justice as we've kind of talked about in some of our previous episodes there also. This is not a fully formed thought yet, but I think that's a fine line that we have to be wary of.
I think in that situation, I get peace. We want to make sure we're not defining peace as kind of like absence of conflict.
Like, don't rock the boat.
Yeah.
That's not the peace
we're talking about. I mean, I think the life of the Christian is very intentional of protecting the downtrodden mm-hmm. and standing in the gap
right.
between those that are stepped upon and those that are doing the stepping. I think that is very intentional what the life of the Christian is. But I do think when Jesus approaches others with conflict, he's almost always, in a sense, punching up at the system. He's almost always going after those with power, those with prestige, those with. Mm-hmm. And so I think, sometimes the life of the Christian, in an effort to make peace, sometimes does need to be firm and to protect those beneath. But Jesus never goes after the one that's down mm-hmm. and say, this is why you're down, in a sense.
Yeah.
He never goes after the prostitute and says, this is why your life sucks right now, because the choices you made.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't go after them. He goes after the money changers in the temples.
Yeah.
And so that, I think, is trying to exemplify Jesus as best we can. That is what it means, but it doesn't go after those that are already beaten by life.
Well, I love that you say that Jesus punches up. I write comedy, and one of the first rules of comedy, comedy, is you always punch up. You don't punch down with your jokes. And I think, maybe this is naive, but I think it's really very possible to acknowledge somebody's fears and insecurities, even when they are, say, spouting racism as a result of those fears and insecurities, and acknowledge those and still say, okay, I'm going to try and empathize and get where you're coming from here, but we also need to point out that this is really, really harmful. I think that those two things are not necessarily mutually exclusive. Like, you can do both.
Yeah,
I think you can too. I just think that there are a lot of places in our current context where people will say, oh, well, I'm supposed to be a person of peace or whatever, so I am not supposed to mix church and politics, or I'm not supposed to speak on this issue, or I'm not. And so I just want to be clear, like, we have to be aware of that line. And
Well, I think that's the temptation, is that's very much the easy way out, right?
Yeah. I think that's part of the first temptations we kind of looked at, is like, it's easy to just check out and say, like, boom, I don't want to be involved. I don't want to deal with any of this. And that's easy for churches to do, you know, that the cities could be burning all around them and they just want to huddle in place, on the flip side, it's easy, you know, to throw gasoline on the fire without bringing Jesus into the equation, or just using Jesus as a sword instead of Jesus as a balm, you know, healing tool. I think for me, looking at Jesus again, you know, a hidden part of the Gospels that I think it's easy for us to overlook is looking at Jesus, who Jesus has surrounded himself with, his 12 closest companions and friends and the disciples. And in that process, in these 12 disciples that we see Jesus surrounded by, there's one, Matthew, who's a tax collector, an employee of the state who works for the Roman government, a bad guy in a lot of sense, because he's probably cheating his neighbors out of their money. He's an employee of the Roman government, so he's probably betrayed the Israeli people by working with their oppressors. That's one of his disciples. And another disciple, a guy we don't really know anything about, is this guy named Simon the Zealot, who is a revolutionary who wants to overthrow the Romans, who wants Rome out of Israel. And you have these two people who have dedicated parts of their life to diametrically opposed ideas. One is a partner with the state, the other wants to overthrow it, and they are both in that inner circle of Jesus. And we don't know anything about them, really. We don't know if they fight, we don't know if they disagree, but we both know they're there when Jesus breaks bread at the Last Supper. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a beautiful image, that like, even though they could have such different points of view, Jesus can unite them. And I think we really want to make sure the church in this healing time, especially when Christians have diametrically opposed views, saying Jesus can unite us right now. Let's get united in Jesus and find healing here. And then that's the only way we can bring that out into the world. And so I do think that's part of that peacemaking experience, just to follow. If Jesus' disciples could figure that out, how can we figure that out?
All right. Well, hey, if you liked what you heard, regardless of what the results of this election are, we hope that you will be sharing this out with friends and family so that we can all be working towards becoming peacemakers in our world and in our community. So you can find us at beyondsundaypodcast.com, wherever delectable podcasts are available for your audio consumption. And be sure to rate, review, and like us, because it really does help us out. It lets us spread the word about Beyond Sunday as well. And of course, don't forget to let us know what you heard at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.